I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wheeler winds up, and the 1-2 pitch. Breaking ball, strike three, called, got him looking. And Cronenworth, the eighth strikeout victim of the night for Zach Wheeler, who goes seven scoreless innings here in game one of the NLCS. Zach Wheeler has been simply brilliant.
There you go. Scott Fransky, that's what we need tonight. It's all we need tonight. By the way, one of the partners Scott Fransky worked with during this year was one of my favorite Phillies over the years, turkey bacon himself, Eric Kratz, who's nice enough to join us. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I never heard that I was one of your favorites, though.
I interviewed you, so you're not going to remember this, but when we, years ago on WIP, we went down to spring training, and we were doing a game, and you hit a home run in this game.
Yep.
You were, like, trying to make the team. And then you came, like, still during the game after they took you out, and we interviewed you, and you were a riot. And I thought, what a nice guy this guy is. So it's the only time we've ever spoken, but I remember it. I'm surprised you don't. All right, Mike Scalzi, Glenn Mack. Now, Eric, you got around in the major leagues, made the most of it. I'm kind of looking here. It appears that in 11 seasons you played for eight different clubs. And made the playoffs a few times, and suggests to me that you have been in the position that the Phillies are in tonight of an elimination game. I just kind of wanted to get from you, particularly a guy who's a catcher, because I always think catchers are smarter, kind of the, you know, what goes through your mind, the psychology of facing elimination.
Oh, man, the psychology of facing elimination is something, when you're in that moment, if you have any doubt, you're never going to win. I've been in moments where, like, I've lost in Game 7, ALCS to the Astros, Game 7 of the World Series to the Giants, Game 7 to the Dodgers in the NLCS. So I've seen it.
And a lot
the
of games.
Clubhouse.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of games. Game 5, I was sitting on the bench for the game where Holiday versus Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think, so as a fan, you sit there, and when you're not playing, that's what you are. You're just a fan with awesome seats. And you're sitting there and you're like, okay, what do we have to do to win? Okay, the first guy got out. Oh, man, this is bad. This isn't bad. But when you're playing in those games, it's like an extra level of ultra focus. And when things start going your way, I hear all the time, I hear Howard Eskin say, oh, there's no momentum in baseball. There's no momentum, you know, there's 100% momentum. Because when you get a big hit, it is just something that just continues to roll. Now, if you don't get any hits, if Wheeler comes out and he's got, you know, three scoreless and Astros really don't have anything going, then you're just kind of waiting on edge. You're waiting on edge, and guys kind of get into like a extra inning mentality of, okay, well, I got to be the one that does it.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, it's just a matter of being okay with seeing the positive in everything, and that can be tough in baseball.
Eric, we've had a couple callers ask about potentially the Phillies changing their lineup a little bit tonight to account for the fact that guys like Rhys Hoskins or Nick Castellanos haven't been hitting lately. In your experience, what would be the effect to the team if, hypothetically, Rob Thomson were to change his lineup before tonight's game?
I think guys would, they'd figure it out. Like, you'd be like, okay, well, I just got to do my part anyway. I don't think anybody's feelings would be hurt. I think it would be a ton of second guessing afterwards if it doesn't go well. But I think it would be more detrimental than it would be helpful. Like, I'm going to quote Charlie Manuel. because you have guys in your lineup that are really good. If you don't think Rhys Hoskins is good enough, don't put him in there. But Charlie Manuel would always say, well, you know, if he's not swinging well, that means I better move him up in the lineup because he's about to get hot. and that is the mentality that Topper has. When I would talk to him during the season, he trusts these guys so much that, you know what, at some point you might trust them to a fault. And a lineup that knows, if you know, okay, this guy, he pitched to this guy this way, I see a trend, now all of a sudden your at-bat feels like you've had this at-bat before. And I get it. Hoskins has, you know, Hoskins and Realmuto both have the same amount of strikeouts, you know, and they're both leading the postseason ever in strikeouts. And I get that. But what have we seen this series? It's all about one pitch. It's all about one at-bat. And you never know if that's going to be the one that wins the game for you, which pushes you to Game 7, which ultimately wins the World Series for you.
Eric Kratz is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric with a K, Kratz, K-R-A-T-Z, 11. So,
19. Not 11, 19.
Oh. Wait, actually, I got Eric Kratz 31. Hold on, I'm going to find your Twitter account.
Oh, 31.
Yes, there it is. Eric Kratz 31. We're both wrong. There you go. E-R-I-K-K-R-A-T-Z 31. All right.
If you guys aren't careful, Elon's going to kick you both off of Twitter. Right. Jeez.
Okay. So, as a longtime Major League catcher who spent your career handling Major League pitchers, you got Zach Wheeler coming in tonight, who was so good early in the playoffs and has, you know, said by all accounts, he's gassed. He doesn't have much left. What do you, if you're the manager, if you're the catcher, what do you try to squeeze out of him tonight on what figures to be? After tonight, he's got 100 days to rest.
You get everything you can. You make sure you find out how he feels, and you hopefully can get an honest answer. And the game's going to really rely on JT. Zach's not going to have – he's not going to have 99. Okay. So how do we attack? Do we attack him more like if – I'm trying to think of somebody that doesn't throw 99. You know, you kind of look at it that way. He still has a sinker. He still has the will to want to do it. And if his stuff isn't there, and that's got to be an in-game evaluation, then you have to maybe attack him a little bit differently. I would never say to anybody, hey, nibble a little bit. But you saw what happened the last game in Houston when he just attacked. You know, his stuff wasn't quite as sharp. He didn't have that last little bite on his fastball or his breaking ball, and they hit it early in the count. So his mentality is, I'm attacking the zone. I'm going to attack the zone, and I'm going to get out that way. He has enough control that he might need to be able to nibble. I'm not saying that's the game plan. I'm saying in the moment, you know if a guy doesn't have his stuff. And JT needs to be able to communicate that to Zach, but he also needs to be able to communicate that to Topper so Topper can make a in-game, non-analytical decision of, hey, you know what? My guy doesn't got it. Or, you know what? This guy's the cheese, and I'm going to keep him in there just like, you know, the Rays didn't do when Blake Snell was in the game.
Mm. Eric, the Phillies were kind of poised to take control of the series, it seemed, after Game 3. You know, you win 7-0, you hit 5 home runs, and then the Astros come back and win those 2 games at Citizens Bank Park. What is it, apart from the cheating, about the Astros? That,
I know you're talking to a former Astro, by the way.
I know. But what is it about them that kind of gives them this? I mean, obviously they're really good, but is there something else going on here that keeps them kind of cool in these situations, so to speak?
Experience is the first thing everyone's going to say. Yes, they're very good, but I think their process is something that, it's just like leaving Rhys in the 2-hole. It's the process of, hey, these guys can do it. Leave them where they are and continue that process. And the process is they don't strike out a lot and they walk more than everybody else. So it's, you know, it's one of those, they're in the top 5 in both categories. And so in games when you need a dinger, yeah, they can supply that. But they're just going to be there and constantly be a gnat and constantly be able to work at bats. And I'm not saying the strikeout is awful, because I do believe that the home run versus the strikeout is way more valuable, all that stuff. But this is the World Series. This is why the Dodgers have been here so often, or have been to the point so often, and they haven't won it. In these games, you got to be able to have some grit. And that's why I think the Phillies have gotten to where they are, because they have that grit. They have that, in a sense, not to be corny, but they have that Philly mentality. And they've embraced that, and that's what's got them to this point. No matter what it is, that's how you can get to this point. And then when you hit some dingers, it works out. And the Astros just encompass all of that. And the thing that's crazy to me is the fact that the Astros, cheating or not cheating, their minor league system just keeps churning out people.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, yeah, we'll get rid of Correa, turn someone else out. Like, really, like, the cheaters that are on the team anymore are Yuli and Bregman. Because I would bet the house Altuve didn't cheat because of playing with him several different times in my career. And so it's just those three guys. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest, you know, so I think it's changed so much, and yet they're still in this position.
All right. And you mentioned the farm system, and that's what I want to ask you about, and specifically with pitching. And I don't know when you were there if this was going on, but I read a piece by Tyler Kepner in the New York Times the other day about how they get these kids out of the Dominican. They're not regarded as top 100 prospects, but they just find a way. They either see something or find a way to develop it in the minor leagues, so that guys like Javier and Framber Valdez, who's going to pitch tonight, just become these hellacious, unhittable pitchers. The first part of it is, did you see that while you were there, or short of that, what do you see in how they develop that pitching staff?
I didn't see it while I was there. While I was there, it was the young position players that came up and really made that impact, and you've seen those guys through the years. But it's really I assume, based on the people that I know that are in the organization, they don't have a secret sauce. They're not like, okay, hey, nobody tell anybody, but, you know, we put our, you know, we put all our baseballs in water, and then we have the Dominican kids throw heavy baseball. You know, it's nothing. There's right. No secret sauce.
Yeah.
But what it is they have a group of people in the organization that truly delves into these kids, whether it's Dominican kids, whether it's American kids, and they put them in the situation to succeed. And I know you're like, oh, well, that sounds easy. Why doesn't everybody do it? Well, how many people have you worked with that are turds and they don't, you know, they don't talk nicely about their other coworkers?
I don't believe that's a question I should answer on the air, but I do.
That's fair. Everybody's
are you talking listening. About me, Mac, now? Are you talking about me?
You're too new to feel that way. But yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You're exactly right. Like, it's like if you sit there and you say, okay, we have three parts of the organization. We have the baseball side, the analytics side, and the business side. And that's how we, you know, that's how we're going to work things. And, you know, the baseball side never understands our analytics side, and the analytic side understands the baseball side. No, they're working in the same direction. They're all pushing for the same thing. And it's the success of the organization, and they find it just like any other Fortune 500 company does. They find it by the employees, the players. They help them become the best that they can. Because with every Brian Abreu that comes out, there's a Jose Cruz that doesn't. There's a, you know,
yeah.
There's so many that don't make it. But how do you treat those guys and put everybody in the same position to hopefully have success?
I hear you. Eric Kratz, it's a pleasure talking to you. Again, really enjoyed your work this year with Scott Fransky. Look forward to hearing you again. Hey, we'll call you after the World Series parade.
Deal. I'll put it in the book. In pencil. In pencil, not in pen, just like Dusty Baker.
Got it. Eric, thank you so much.
No doubt. Thank you, guys.
All right, man. Be well.
Thanks, Eric.
Very sharp guy.
Very sharp guy. The pride of Telford, PA.
Oh, there you go. Turkey
yeah.
bacon.
Christopher Dock. Mennonite.
You know where everybody went to high school, don't you?
Well, Google's an amazing thing, Glenn.
let us get to our pal Kenny from the Dirty 30. Boy, I saw him recently. Hey, Ken.
Glenn, I want to talk about sports, but I'd be remiss if I did not mention to Philadelphia what an absolute fabulous play Clue was. How incredibly funny and entertaining. You had the best lines, Glenn.
I did.
And
script works.
You are absolutely the best actor possible to be able to concentrate with that Miss Scarlet actress. Oh, my God.
Yes. Truth, yes. And by the way, Kenny won tickets on WIP, came out last night, which I really appreciate. I'm glad you had a good time. And, yes, I do play across a woman, an actress, who is stunningly gorgeous. That is correct.
Easy on the eyes.
Yes, that's my wife. She was with us there.
Yes.
But, I just want to compliment you. Thank you so much. Now,
thank you for coming. We had a great time. And, again, final show tonight at 8 o'clock, Players Club of Swarthmore. Who's got anything better to do tonight? Yes. Anyway, thank you. One last thing, and then we'll get to sports. Because I didn't mention it to you. Did you notice, I'm sure you noticed, did you enjoy the surprise voice at the beginning of the radio announcer?
Well, yeah, it was Angelo and Conklin made cameos voice-wise. And
yes.
They did a fabulous job. Angelo proved once again that he does his best work when no one can see him.
Make sure you tell him that. All right. You want to talk Eagles, which, hey, I'm happy to do. We are happy to do.
The thing about football, I love football more than any other sport. I absolutely love the Phillies. This has been a great run. But here's the thing. When football has their playoffs, as intense as they are, it's one day a week, so we can all recover. Baseball, hockey, basketball, this seven-game series, and they go to midnight in the East Coast or 1 o'clock, and they go for weeks. I'm exhausted. I'm enjoying it. But, man, I am tired. And it takes the Phillies to be in the World Series to take the attention away from the only undefeated team in the NFL.
I have good news for you, though.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Watch out, people, on shoulder ahead.
Turn off your GPS. Tomorrow, after the Phillies win Game 7, you get an extra hour of sleep.
That's right. No, isn't it tonight that it switches over?
Yeah, I think we get the extra hour tonight.
Tonight, after they win Game 6, you get an extra hour of sleep. Sorry.
There you go. All right.
I'm pretty fried myself.
This is such a fun but exhausting time right now. I'm just enjoying every minute of it. And the young kids, my kids are young teenagers right now, that this is the first time they're going through, and it's just so much fun to see the excitement in their eyes because they never had this opportunity before. And I just want everybody in Philadelphia to savor this. We get many of these, and let's just enjoy this autumn on a 70-degree day in early November, and life is good right now. And, Glenn, you're a fabulous actor.
It's very kind. It was very nice to see you yesterday night. I really appreciate it. Mike, I think you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Your sons are 10 and 8, 11 and 8?
11 and 8, yeah.
11 and 8. So this, for them, is the first time they've gotten to experience this.
Yeah, it is. And as I said, the 11-year-old in particular is really into it. He's been following religiously. He had gotten back into baseball at the start of the playoffs, even apart from the Phillies. He just liked watching the games. There were so many games at the start of the playoffs that it was basically every day was a triple header, and he was coming home from school and flipping on whatever game happened to be on TV at the time at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and really got back into it. The 8-year-old, not so much, but was the 8-year-old actually said the other day during game 5, my wife was putting the two of them to bed, and he said, I'm rooting for the Astros now because if they win, that means dad comes home sooner. Which is why I love him so much. On the one hand, it was like it warmed my heart, and on the other hand, it was like, well, boy, don't tell your classmates that.
Well, I mean, it's certainly endearing, but like, it breaks your heart at the same time. Well,
yeah, it does.
No disrespect to your son. I hope he gets you back after the parade Wednesday. How's that?
I understand where you're coming from, sir.
All right. 215-592-9494. A lot of Phillies today, obviously. With Game 6 of the World Series, always happy to talk about the Eagles. Coming up, a quick what we're watching. I'm going to give you a great show that actually has a nice Philly flair to it right now. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
All right, what we're watching is sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Receive 20% off all windows and doors with no money down and up to 3 years to pay it off interest-free. Call Guided Door and Window today, 1-877-GO-GUIDA, or visit them at goguida.com. All right, Mike. So the show I'm about to talk about, I reviewed several years back. It's a Netflix show produced and starring a guy named Phil Rosenthal.
A giant in comedy and entertainment.
Indeed. He was the executive producer of the show Everybody Loves Raymond. He's actually loosely the character Ray Romano was based on. He's a very funny guy. He's not a food critic. It's a show about food, but he's not a food critic, really. But he goes to these amazing places all over the world to explore local food and culture. And so a new season just dropped October 22nd. And during this season, he's going to Croatia and Chile and Maine and Philadelphia.
that's a motley crew of locations there.
Yeah, it gets around. So he's here. And the show, as I said, the season just dropped. And so he's at Laser Wolf with Michael Solomonov and his pal, comedian Patton Oswalt. And he's with Mark Vetri at Fiorella Pasta, with their mutual friend Liz Scott, who's the director of Alex's Lemonade. And so he goes to those places, but he also goes to the places that make this city, Philadelphia. Not that those places aren't, because those places are great, but he doesn't go to the tourist traps, right? So he goes to D'Alessandro's for a cheesesteak, and he goes to John's Roast Pork, and he goes to South Philly Barbacoa and Pizzeria Badia and Angelo's Pizza, and he gets ice cream at Franklin Fountain, and he spends a day at Reading Terminal. And, I mean, to be honest, these are a lot of my favorite places that I've gone to for my food hunts over the years. I love these places. And all of this in a one-hour show. And Phil is funny, and it's an easy watch. And you're going to watch this, and you're going to want to get out of your house and go eat at all of these local treasures. So, again, I don't want to spend too much time because we had so much going on. But the name of the show is Somebody Feed Phil. And this particular episode, which you can find on Netflix, it makes our city look great. And not in a touristy way, really finds the places around town that you probably already do love. This is Anthony Bourdain if Anthony Bourdain was just a huge goofball.
Well,
is really what
it is. I'll add two quick things, Glenn, and as you said, we can
I didn't know you watched the show?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm familiar with Phil Rosenthal, obviously. And just as I said, two quick things. Number one, he married a girl from Delaware County. His wife is Monica Horan, who is from Darby. And if you watched Everybody Loves Raymond, she played Robert's on and off girlfriend slash wife, Amy.
Yes.
Terrific actress. And as I said, a Delco girl.
And, secondly, and by the way, she appears on this episode.
Oh, that's cool.
Because he brings a local. And I forget which place he goes to, but he brings all her high school friends and her out to dinner. And she's good. She's funny, too. Yes.
Yeah, she's a Prendy alum, Archbishop Prendy.
As we and said, then, Mike Sielski knows where everybody went to high school.
And then the second thing, Glenn, I am so hungry now, having listened to you list all those places. And here I am in Houston. I don't know if I can get barbecue at, 10:30 in the morning, but after, I may run out during a break and try. Because I'm really hungry now.
Well, watch this show when you come back, but make sure you either watch it on a full stomach or you're ready to get out on the train, on the subway, and go to all of these local gems, because it shows off. I think Philadelphia is a great food town, and I think Philadelphia is a great food town not just because it has the high-end places that you can go on an expense account or go for a special celebration, but is a great food town because the sandwiches here are amazing, and Reading Terminal is an incredible place, and we are part of the pizza belt where you can get great pizza and all of that, and that's what this episode shows, and so I loved it.
Oh,
so there
all right.
You go.
I will definitely check it out once the World Series has ended.
Yes, indeed. Somebody yeah. Feed Phil is the name of the show. Watch the Philadelphia episode that just dropped. All right, let's go to Steph in Mount Airy. What's happening, Steph?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd much rather talk about Prendy Girls and our experience with Prendy Girls than Nick Castellanos. So,
I don't know. Do you have experience with Prendy Girls, Mike? I
dated an Archbishop Prendergast girl when I was in college at LaSalle. So, yes, and I have experience, and we'll leave it at that. Because I am a man of class and grace and discerning, being discerning on the radio.
Exactly. Certainly when it comes to the radio, I think it's a good policy. Not that I want to talk about Nick very much, though. Yeah. But, man, my point, I guess, is that you can't lump him in as a batter who is not hitting the ball right now. I mean, if you look at his season, I've never seen a guy give away more at-bats over the course of the year. And, I mean, really, his last game, we could be more encouraged. It was one of his more encouraging games, and he went 0 for 4, but he did turn in a couple good at-bats, and he lined out once. So that's where we're at as a guy who's batting right behind, you know, almost our entire offense right there. So I think
it was a lost season for him, and I don't know why. There is a history of free agents moving from one team to another and then having the first year be a down year and then coming back. I mean, we've certainly seen that. But I'm just looking. I just called up his page on Baseball Reference. And I mean, 2021, to refresh people's minds, 100 RBIs, 34 home runs, OPS at 939, All-Star, 12th in MVP voting, Silver Slugger.
This year,
he was healthy this year, 13 home runs, 694 OPS. Mike, his OPS dropped 245 points this year.
Yeah, go ahead, Steph.
I was going to say he's arguably the worst hitter in the lineup batting behind Bryce Harper. I mean, it's just a fact. You know, just poor at bats. I find that he has an enormously long swing. I don't know how he put up the numbers he did a couple of years ago. He's very long to the ball. He looks like, with that swing, it looks like he has to kind of guess hit almost all the time. That's why he's number one in swing percentage, you know. No walks, no homers. It's just a black
Mike,
hole.
What do you think?
Well, it was interesting, Glenn. I was amongst several media members who talked to Castellanos after game five because he was the last out of the game. He had come up earlier in the game with a chance to do some damage and didn't. And he insisted that he was feeling better at the plate, that he felt in control. But I think there's a good point that Steph makes there. He does seem like his swing is long, that even when he fouls pitches off, he seems a little defensive up there. And, you know, maybe you write this off as a loss. You just have to write it off as a lost season for him because, as you said, Glenn, go back and look at his full track record. I mean, starting in 2016, his OPS pretty much is 800 or higher every single year. I mean, he was very consistent. It's not as if the Phillies went out and gave him 5 years and $100 million based on 1 or 2 years of great production after a lot of years of not so great production. He was very much a consistent, very good power hitter for a while with multiple teams. So there was no reason to think there would be this drop off, both in the regular season and now in the postseason.
Yeah.
Steph, I agree.
I hear you, man. Thanks. I don't know. I you know, maybe there's something at the end of the year we learn that he played all year with some kind of injury that they never disclosed. Maybe it's just the pressure of moving. You know, he played for Cincinnati the last couple of years. It's not the pressure-packed city it is here. But I always hate that argument. But I don't know. All I know is They signed him to a huge contract for, what, 4 or 5 years? And
5 years, yes.
5 years, $100 million, and he better come back and do it next year because 1 year is an anomaly, 2 years is a trend. The big irony, of course, is he's among the worst defensive outfielders in the major leagues, and here he is. That's where he's earned his keep in the postseason.
Yeah, but I don't think Dave Dombrowski gave him $100 million good field no-hit right fielder.
No, I'm not saying that he did.
And I will point this out too, Glenn, that Castellanos' wife has been on Twitter pointing out that fans have been kind of mistreating her and her family and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's
which is not good.
Never.
Right, never, ever good.
No,
so you don't want to see
wife
that.
Who just buys beer for everybody.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to, there's a lot going on there. And as you said, I'm sure we will find out the full story once game six and or game seven have come and gone.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to Rory in Haddon Township. Wants to talk about the manager. Hey, Rory, how are you?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Hi, Rory.
First, I want to preface my remarks by saying that you two are great together, and you're a wonderful team, and I hope that somewhere down the line, maybe when football and baseball season's over, we get Mike to pair with you, Glenn, on Sunday, too.
Yeah? I don't think it's going to change. I enjoy working with Mike on Saturday, Jody on Sunday, and I think it's working great, but thank you for that compliment.
I want to talk, there's a saying, and I'm not sure who said it. I could have Googled it while I was waiting, but the saying is, foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And Mike made a point about staying the course with this lineup, and I have to disagree. I think substituting for Castellanos and pinch hitting for Marsh isn't panicking. It's just substituting for a player that's just not performing. I definitely would have substituted for Marsh. Maybe with Garrett Stubbs, who's a great bunter, left-handed hitter. He's got a couple of drag run hits this year. Play for the run. And don't worry about hurting anybody's feelings, you know?
Here's the thing, Rory. Garrett Stubbs is the only player on the Phillies roster who hasn't played in the postseason. And if you're going to send him up with first and third in the bottom of the eighth inning of Game 5 of the World Series, in the make-or-break moment of not only Game 5, but maybe the entire series, I'm not sure that's necessarily the best route to take.
Well, okay, let's take Stubbs out of the picture. Substitute somebody else that has played in the World Series and have them bunt or do something. For as good as they say Marsh is going to be, he can hit a fastball right now, and I think that's why the Angels traded him.
By the way, he can bunt. If you are wanting to bunt, that is one thing that Marsh can do, and I heard on Angelo's show the other day that when he was with the Angels this year, he successfully executed a squeeze bunt.
Okay.
If that was your strategy, you could have used him, but I hear your frustration.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong with a bunt, too. Suppose he bunts it too hard and bunts into a double play. You know, there is a little bit, and I get it. Look, you're in that situation. You have the number nine hitter in the lineup up. It is the kind of scenario that, you know, allows for creative managing. Hey, do we start the runner? Do we hit and run? Do we squeeze? Do we do something? Those options are open to you. But there is a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking going here because Marsh struck out on three pitches. It doesn't necessarily mean he was swinging from the heels. It doesn't necessarily mean that if Rob Thompson had tried to get creative, it necessarily would have worked out.
Let's say hi to Pete in Springfield. Hey, Pete.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Hi, Pete.
Hey, I got a call. I respect you guys. I love this show and stuff. I wish Mike all the best, but I'm getting tired of people with selective memory, okay, when it comes to Nick Castellanos. Was he great during the season? No, he wasn't, okay? But the fact of the matter is, without his bat, you do not get past the Braves. I think he batted close to 500 against the Braves. It's 6 or 7 RBIs. It's some clutch hits against the Padres. You know, the real culprit on this team is Rhys Hoskins, okay? And I'm tired of it. Rhys, number one,
it's interesting that you talk about selective memory, and I think you're forgetting some of Hoskins' contributions this postseason.
Okay, home run, strikeout. Home run, strikeout. Okay, fine.
I'll take home run, strikeout. That sounds good.
At least with Castellanos strikes out, who do it swinging? Well, who put the bat on the ball, and he gets, if he gets out, he puts the bat on the ball. Hoskins the other night walked away from the plate twice before the pitch was actually in the strike zone. He just walked away. I'm out. You got me out.
Who do you think has been more valuable this postseason of those two?
Castellanos.
Oh, I disagree.
Because of his defense, too.
I thoroughly disagree with you. But that's okay.
I'll say this, Glenn. I think Pete makes a decent point in that it's closer than you think because of the defensive component, right? Like, Castellanos saved the Phillies bacon in Game 1 against the Braves. He saved it in Game 1 against the Astros. True. Look,
hey, neither of those guys is setting the world on fire.
Right,
so
we're
arguing, you know, neither's going to get the World Series MVP. On the other hand, Hoskins got 6 home runs and 12 RBIs in 16 games, which to me is a bigger contribution than those couple of catches Castellanos made. Again, neither guy is going to walk off with the trophy.
And where's Castellanos at? He's probably close to 10 RBIs so far.
I'll let you know in a second.
All right. I'll look up too. Yeah, look. Some of what we're batting around here has to do with the nature of baseball playoffs. It's everything is tight and condensed, and things can turn very quickly. So, as we pointed out earlier in the show, for instance, you know, JT Realmuto hits a clutch home run in Game 1 in the 10th inning to win the game, and he's 1-for-17 since then with 11 or 12 strikeouts. That's the nature of postseason baseball. You're rarely going to find somebody who is as consistently great as
7 RBIs for Castellanos.
Okay, there you go. As consistently great as Bryce Harper has been throughout this postseason. Go back to 2009, for instance. Ryan Howard was the most valuable player of the league championship series. He pretty much single-handedly beat the Dodgers, and then he had a terrible series against the Yankees. So, right. You know, it's just the way a
okay, but part
goes.
Of it is, you're right, and it's the, you know, you're playing 5 games, 7 games, and if a guy has 5 bad games in June, nobody really notices, right? You go 2-for-18 in a stretch in June, it's like, well, whatever. You go 2-for-18 in the World Series, and you're a bum. However, not that I'm making a huge argument that Rhys Hoskins is the MVP in anything, but Castellanos is having a disappointing postseason coming off of a disappointing season.
Mm-hmm.
Castellanos has not been hot since 2021.
Yeah, no, that's all true. And it's kind of to your point, right, Glenn? Like, you know, the Phillies don't beat the Braves without the Hoskins 3-run homer in Game 3. And he hits 4 of them against the Padres. How rare is it that a guy hits 4 home runs in a league championship series and isn't the most valuable player of that league championship series? It's crazy to think about. But you're right. But again, that's the point of postseason baseball, is that a slump can last a game. You know, we've spent a good portion of this show dwelling on one moment in Game 5 about Brandon Marsh and should they have hit and run or should they have had him bunt and all that. And that's what makes playoff baseball great, is that we're going to spend years talking about that.
Correct. 215-592-9494. Mike Sielski, Glenn McNamara, come out of a new... Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack, now 94 WIP. We'll get back to the callers in a moment, but this is the time of the show where we always check in with our friends from Cooper Bone and Joint. Dr. David Gelt is with us this morning. Hello, Doc.
Hey, guys, doing today? Thanks for the TV rec. I'm looking forward to listening to that one.
It's a great show. Everybody feed Phil, or somebody feed Phil, excuse me. It's a great show. You should watch. All right, so two guys we want to ask you about. Let us start with James Harden. And I wish I had more detail on this, because I'm sure that would be helpful to you. He has a right foot tendon strain. I can't tell you what tendon it is. I don't even know how many tendons one has in the foot. But he took a hard fall in the game against Washington on Wednesday, stayed on the court for a couple minutes, got up, reached down, grabbed at his knee, not sure how that's related, was in noticeable pain, went to the locker room, and now appears to be out for a month. Again, I can't tell you it's the particular tendon, but do you have any? Can you weigh in on this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the details are not there, so we're not sure which tendon or how bad it was or where it is. But tendon in general, if it's like a tendon on the outside of the foot or underneath the foot, obviously there's different variations on how bad an injury could be. You could stretch it out, you can have a partial tear, or you can have a full tear. Initially said it was a month, and then I think they came out the other day that it may not be as bad as I thought. So hopefully it's just a strain or a partial.
Well, what they said is they're going to reevaluate in 2 weeks, but I feel like they always say that.
Yeah, that's true. True. But with any soft tissue injury, you have to obviously let it heal. Sometimes you have to rest. You may be in a boot now, and then you do some rehab. Hopefully it's not a full tear where you have to reconstruct or do any surgery. I'm sure they're going to get some more studies with MRIs and such, but hopefully it's, just a little setback for the season, and we can get back to get rolling.
Dr. Gehl, the Eagles pretty obviously missed Jordan Davis against the Texans the other night. When it came to their run defense, he's got what is believed to be, and I think the Eagles have confirmed, a high ankle sprain. They're saying he's going to be out, 5 weeks, I believe. Tell our audience how bad a high ankle sprain can tend to be, and what kind of shape do you think Davis could be in once he comes back?
Yeah, so high ankle sprains are tough issues. It's actually sometimes better to even have sometimes a fracture than a high ankle sprain just because of the time of recovery. But a high ankle sprain is basically, it's in between the shin bone and the bone on the outside. There's a little sheath in between there that can get stretched out and irritated. So if you squeeze the shin with the other with the leg, sometimes you get pain there, and that's why it's called a high ankle sprain. But because of that, it can take longer to heal versus what normally you do if you twist an ankle and you have an injury on the outside of the ankle or the foot. But usually you have to let this heal. You're in a boot. Sometimes you're non-weight bearing for a period of time. That's why it take about 5 to 6 weeks. And then you have to do some rehab thereafter. Being that he's such a big guy too, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So it's a tough situation with a high ankle sprain. We always want to, if we can avoid that, we can. But unfortunately, it's something that we have to deal with.
All right. Well, and more important medical news, what's your medical opinion of tonight's Phillies game in the World Series?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's all up to, I'm not sure about Wheeler. I know we didn't talk about him with, is he hurt or does he have a dead arm or what? But hopefully his velocity comes back up, and hopefully at least gets through the Astros lineup at least once or twice maybe, and then we can see how he does. But I think it all comes up to him, and then obviously the bats got to start hitting.
Well, doctor,
appears the doctor's hedging. In fact, a true strong.
I'm hoping Game Seven. I was my daughter's soccer game, and someone was telling me that the Phillies have never been in a Game Seven.
Correct, in their history. That's correct.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll change that.
Well, doctor, what do you think about Wheeler and his arm? I mean, can the 6 days off help him? Should they help him?
Time is the best thing. I know they obviously pushed him. He was supposed to play the other day, and they pushed him until today. So. We'll see. I mean, his velocity did drop a little bit. I don't know if it was, from his forearm injury that he had last month, is that catching up to him a little bit? He's running on fumes right now with any pitcher, but I know hopefully he'll gut it out and we'll have a victory.
Well, there you have it. Dr. Gehl, always a pleasure. Enjoy your week. How's your daughter's soccer team, by the way? Are they any good?
They did really well. They had the last game today, so... first, second grader, so, it's always fun.
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
I get it. Right, so mostly they just run around and kick each other.
There's going to be major off-season changes, I think, if it doesn't go well today.
That's
I don't
right.
know.
Dr. Gehl, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
All right, go Phillies.
All right, there you go. Take care. Go Phillies. And he mentioned, or you mentioned, the thing with Jordan Davis, which is high ankle sprains are tough to recover from. They're tougher when you weigh 325 pounds.
Yes, very much so. That's a lot of weight and pressure that's being put on that ankle. So,
need him back for the playoffs, baby.
Maybe it's a situation similar to Zach Wheeler. Well, he'll be well-rested for the start of the postseason, and we'll see how it goes the later the postseason goes.
I like it. All right, Bob and Penn Salkin is here. Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, guys. Talk a little Phillies here. Problem I'm having is with Segura, he ain't driving the ball. I mean, and I think it's time we do shake it up. I know this is Game 5 of the World Series, or Game 6, sorry, and it's tough to change a lineup, but it's just basic. We haven't
done
nothing.
So what do you want to do? What is your strategy here, Bob?
My strategy is, I don't know, put Sosa in a shortstop for a change. Try to get some life going, man. We haven't done nothing at all. It's the same 8, 9 guys. It's basically, there's a reason.
They got to the World Series. They are now playing their whatever 180 something game of the year of the season, because starting in June, these players that you are quitting on, these players that you do not believe in, got on this streak that brought them to Game 6 of the World Series. And because they have lost two in a row, you are ready to dump the entire thing.
I didn't say dump them, Glenn. All I'm saying is Stott looks like he's completely tired. I know this is his first rookie.
All right, so Stott's tired. Segura is no good. Who else you want to put on the bench or move on?
Now you put words in my mouth, Glenn. I didn't say Segura is not good. I'm just saying we need some life. And he's not doing it, man. I'm sorry. You keep blaming Nick. I mean, why? Seriously. It's not Nick.
I'm telling you what Nick is doing, which is playing poorly, but I am not doing what you are doing, which is saying, you know what, they lost two games in a row. Let's just put all the names in a hat and pull them out.
I didn't say that, Glenn. I'm saying make basic changes. Put Sosa in at shortstop. Get Stott a game off. That's it. All I'm saying is put some life in it. There's a reason that Tapper's been a bench coach for 30 years, okay? He made one good move in this whole series by putting Alvarez come in the fifth inning. That's the only thing he's done right in this whole series. He hasn't done nothing all series. One move. He's an assist bench coach for a reason, Glenn. 30 years. Can you tell me why?
All right, Bob. I love you. I'll talk to you next week, pal.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Glenn.
All right. Be well.
Wow. There's a lot
there. Who's
going
to be the National League manager of the year, by the way?
Probably Rob Thomson. The Phillies are, I think, 30 games over 500 since Thomson took over as manager. Edmundo Sosa, who apparently is just this, he's Alex Rodriguez and just hasn't been unleashed yet by Rob Thomson.
And I like Sosa as a guy, he'll play him against certain pitchers, and that's
fine. He played him earlier in the series when Wheeler started, I believe, game two. Never mind that Gene Segura was the guy who got the line, the RBI single to right center field in the eighth inning that made it 3-2 the other night, and it's gotten some big hits throughout the postseason. Look, I get it. You know, the Phillies are this close. People are frustrated. They're seeing a team that has mashed the ball for virtually the entire postseason, and they see the last two games, and they want change for change's sake to kind of shake them out of it. I'm not convinced that's going to work. What they need to do is, you know, go out there and hit Valdez tonight. And the best chance you have to do that is with the players, generally speaking, who have been in the lineup for this series.
And I hear what he's saying about Stott. Stott, I believe, doesn't have a hit yet in the World Series. So I'm not arguing that Stott is cold. I'm not even arguing that it would be a terrible change if that's what the manager thinks. But I guess we've had maybe one call too many today that says, you know what, everything that got him there, let's just throw that all in the trash and start anew. This team needs a shakeup. It doesn't need a shakeup. It just needs to hit the ball.
Yeah, and the other thing at play here, Glenn, real quick, is that the Astros, again, are really, really good.
Yeah, they're
anybody who went into this thinking the Phillies were going to roll them in four or five games, that is not the opponent that they're up against.
No, the pitcher tonight is really tough, but we will remain confident. Coming up, we're going to talk some football with our pal Derek Gunn. Coming up next, Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack, now on 94 WIP.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack, now 94 WIP. We'll get back to the callers in a moment, but this is the time of the show where we always check in with our friends from Cooper Bone and Joint. Dr. David Gelt is with us this morning. Hello, Doc.
How you guys doing today? Thanks for the TV rec. I'm looking forward to listening to that one.
It's a great show. Everybody feed Phil, or somebody feed Phil, excuse me. It's a great show. You should watch. All right, so two guys we want to ask you about. Let us start with James Harden. And I wish I had more detail on this because I'm sure that would be helpful to you. He has a right foot tendon strain. I can't tell you what tendon it is. I don't even know how many tendons one has in the foot. But he took a hard fall in the game against Washington on Wednesday. Stayed on the court for a couple minutes. Got up, reached down, grabbed at his knee. Not sure how that's related. Was in noticeable pain, went to the locker room, and now appears to be out for a month. Again, I can't tell you it's the particular tendon, but do you have any? Can you weigh in on this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the details are not there, so we're not sure which tendon or how bad it was or where it is. But tendon in general, if it's like a tendon on the outside of the foot or underneath the foot, obviously there's different variations on how bad an injury could be. You could stretch it out, you can have a partial tear, or you can have a full tear. Initially said it was a month, and then I think they came out the other day that it may not be as bad as I thought. So hopefully it's just a strain or a partial
tear. Well, what they said is they're going to reevaluate in 2 weeks, but I feel like they always say that.
Yeah, that's true. But with any soft tissue injury, you have to obviously let it heal. Sometimes you have to rest. You may be in a boot now, and then you do some rehab. Hopefully it's not a full tear where you have to reconstruct or do any surgery. I'm sure they're going to get some more studies with MRIs and such, but hopefully it's, just a little setback for the season, and we can get back to get rolling.
Dr. Gale, the Eagles pretty obviously missed Jordan Davis against the Texans the other night when it came to their run defense. He's got what is believed to be, and I think the Eagles have confirmed, a high ankle sprain. They're saying he's going to be out, 5 weeks, I believe. Tell our audience how bad a high ankle sprain can tend to be, and what kind of shape do you think Davis could be in once he comes back?
Yeah, so high ankle sprains are tough issues. It's actually sometimes better to even have sometimes a fracture than a high ankle sprain just because of the time of recovery. But a high ankle sprain is basically, it's in between the shin bone and the bone on the outside. There's a little sheath in between there that can get stretched out and irritated. So if you squeeze the shin with the other with the leg, sometimes you get pain there, and that's why it's called a high ankle sprain. But because of that, it can take longer to heal versus what normally you do if you twist an ankle and you have an injury on the outside of the ankle or the foot. But usually you have to let this heal. You're in a boot. Sometimes you're non-weight bearing for a period of time. That's why it can take about 5 to 6 weeks. And then you have to do some rehab thereafter. Being that he's such a big guy, too, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. So it's a tough situation with a high ankle sprain. You always want to, if we can avoid that, we can. But unfortunately, it's something that we have to deal with.
All right. Well, and more important medical news, what's your medical opinion of tonight's Phillies game in the World Series?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's all up to, I'm not sure about Wheeler. I know we didn't talk about him with, is he hurt or does he have a dead arm or what? But hopefully his velocity comes back up, and I'm hoping at least gets through the Astros lineup at least once or twice, maybe, and then we can see how he does. But I think it all comes up to him, and then obviously the bats got to start hitting.
Well, doctor,
appears the doctor's hedging. In fact, a true strong.
I'm hoping Game Seven. I was my daughter's soccer game, and someone was telling me that the Phillies have never been in a Game Seven.
In their history. That's correct.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll change that.
Well, doctor, what do you think about Wheeler and his arm? I mean, can the 6 days off help him? Should they help him?
I mean, time is the best thing. I know they obviously pushed him. He was supposed to play the other day, and they pushed him until today. So we'll see. I mean, his velocity did drop a little bit. I don't know if it was from his forearm injury that he had last month. Is that catching up to him a little bit? He's running on fumes right now with any pitcher. But I know hopefully he'll gut it out, and we'll have a victory.
No, there you have it. Dr. Geld, always a pleasure. Enjoy your week. How's your daughter's soccer team, by the way? Are they any good?
They did really well. They had the last game today. So, first, second grader, so, it's always fun.
Okay.
Oh, jeez.
I get it. So, mostly they just run around and kick each other.
There's going to be major off-season changes, I think, if it doesn't go well today.
That's
I don't know.
Right. Dr. Geld, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
All right, go Phillies.
All right, there you go. Take care. Go Phillies. And he mentioned, or you mentioned, the thing with Jordan Davis, which is high ankle sprains are tough to recover from. They're tougher when you weigh 325 pounds.
Yes, yes, very much so. That's a lot of weight and pressure that's being put on that ankle. So,
need him back for the playoffs, baby.
Maybe it's a situation similar to Zach Wheeler. Well, he'll be well rested for the start of the postseason, and we'll see how it goes the later the postseason goes.
I like it. All right, Bob and Penn Salkin is here. Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, guys. Talk a little Phillies here. Problem I'm having is with Segura. He ain't driving the ball. I mean, and I think it's time we do shake it up. I know this is Game 5 of the World Series, or Game 6, sorry, and it's tough to change a lineup, but it's just basic. We haven't
done
nothing.
So what do you want to do? What is your strategy here, Bob?
My strategy is, I don't know, put Sosa in a shortstop for a change. Try to get some life going, man. We haven't done nothing at all. It's the same 8-9 guys. It's basically, there's a reason.
They got to the World Series. They are now playing their, whatever, 180-something game of the year, of the season, because starting in June, these players that you are quitting on, these players that you do not believe in, got on this streak that brought them to Game 6 of the World Series. And because they have lost two in a row, you are ready to dump the entire thing.
I didn't say dump him, Glenn. All I'm saying is Stott looks like he's completely tired. I know this is his first rookie.
All right, so Stott's tired. Segura is no good. Who else you want to put on the bench or move on?
Now you put words in my mouth, Glenn. I didn't say Segura is not good. I'm just saying we need some life, and he's not doing it, man. I'm sorry. You keep blaming Nick. I mean, why? Seriously. It's not Nick.
I'm telling you what Nick is doing, which is playing poorly, but I am not doing what you are doing, which is saying, you know what, they lost two games in a row. Let's just put all the names in a hat and pull them out.
I didn't say that, Glenn. I'm saying make a basic changes. Put Sosa in at shortstop. Give Stott a game off. That's it. All I'm saying is put some life in it. There's a reason that Topper's been a bench coach for 30 years, okay? He made one good move in this whole series by putting Alvarez to come in the fifth inning. That's the only thing he's done right in this whole series. He hasn't done nothing all series. One move. He's assist bench coach for a reason, Glenn. 30 years. Can you tell me why?
All right, Bob. I love you. I'll talk to you next week, pal.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Glenn.
All right. Be well.
Wow. There's a lot.
Who's
going to
be the National League Manager of the Year, by the way?
Probably Rob Thomson. The Phillies are, I think, 30 games over 500 since Thomson took over as manager. Edmundo Sosa, who apparently is just this, he's Alex Rodriguez and just hasn't been unleashed yet by Rob Thomson.
And I like Sosa as a guy, he'll play him against certain pitchers, and that's
yeah.
Fine.
He played him earlier in the series when Wheeler started, I believe, game two. Never mind that Gene Segura was the guy who got the line, the RBI single to right center field in the eighth inning that made it 3-2 the other night, and it's gotten some big hits throughout the postseason. Look, I get it. You know, the Phillies are this close. People are frustrated. They're seeing a team that has mashed the ball for virtually the entire postseason, and they see the last two games, and they want change for change's sake to kind of shake them out of it. I'm not convinced that's going to work. What they need to do is, you know, go out there and hit Valdez tonight. And the best chance you have to do that is with the players, generally speaking, who have been in the lineup for this series.
And I hear what he's saying about Stott. Stott, I believe, doesn't have a hit yet in the World Series. So I'm not arguing that Stott is cold. I'm not even arguing that it would be a terrible change if that's what the manager thinks. But I guess we've had maybe one call too many today that says, you know what, everything that got him there, let's just like throw that all in the trash and start anew. This team needs a shakeup. It doesn't need a shakeup. It just needs to hit the ball.
Yeah, and the other thing at play here, Glenn, real quick, is that the Astros, again, are really, really good.
Yeah, they're
anybody who went into this thinking the Phillies were going to roll them in four or five games, sorry, that is not the opponent that they're up against.
No, the pitcher tonight is really tough, but we will remain confident. Coming up, we're going to talk some football with our pal Derek Gunn. Coming up next, Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack, now on 94 WIP.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.